LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For information, see LibriVox.blogspot.com. Today's recording by Hugh McGuire. It was 8 o'clock when we landed. We walked for a short time on the shore, enjoying the transitory light, and then retired to eat, contemplating the lovely scene of waters, woods and mountains, obscured in the darkness that still wind, which had fallen in the south, now rose with great violence in the west. The moon had reached her summit, and the heavens was beginning to descend. The clouds swept across it swifter than the flight of the vulture in winged her rays, while the lake reflected the sea. Elizabeth observed my agitation for some time and fearful silence, but there was something in my glance which communicated terror to her. Trembling, she asked, "What is it that agitates you? What is it you fear?" "Oh, peace, peace, my love. This night, and all will be safe. But this night is dreadful, very dreadful." I passed an hour in this state of mind, and suddenly I reflected how fearful the combat which I momentarily expected would be to my wife. And earnestly she left me, and I continued some time walking up and down the passage to the house, and inspecting every corner while the force retreated to my adversary. But I discovered no trace of him, and was beginning to conjecture that some unfortunate chance had intervened. When suddenly I heard a shrill, dreadful scream. It came from the room into which Elizabeth had retired. As I heard it, the whole truth rushed into my mind. My arms dropped, the motion of every muscle fired. there in lifeless land, thrown across the road, head hanging down, pale, distorted features, half covered by her hair. Everywhere I turn, I see the same figure, with bloodless eyes and relaxed form. This and live, alas, life is obstinate, is closest, where it is most hated. For a moment only did I lose recollection. I fell senseless to the ground. When I recovered, I found myself surrounded by the people of the inn. Rushed towards her and embraced her with ardor, but the deadly languor and coldness of feelings told me that what I now held in my arms had ceased to be the elusive thing I loved and cherished. Her murderous mark, the fiend's grasp upon her neck, and the breath had ceased to issue from her lips. While I still hung over her in agony of despair, I happened to look up. The windows of the room had before been darkened, and I felt a kind of panic on seeing the pale yellow light illuminate the chamber. The shutters had been thrown back, and with a sensation of horror not to be described, I saw at the open window a figure of the most hideous horror. The grin was on the face of the monster. He seemed to peer with his fiendish fingers pointed towards the corpse of the woman. I rushed towards the window, drawing a pistol from my bosom and fired, but he eluded me, leapt from the station, running with the swiftness of light, plunged into the lake. The report of the pistol brought a crowd into the room. I pointed to the spot where he had disappeared, and we followed the track of the boats. Nets were cast but in vain. After passing several hours, we returned. Hopeless, most like a penguin. In this state, I was carried back and placed in the bed, hardly conscious of what had happened. My eyes wandered around the room as if to seek something I had lost. After an interval, I arose and, as if by instinct, crawled into the room. There were women weeping around, hungover, enjoying the sad tears to theirs. All this time, no distinct idea presented itself to my mind, but my thoughts rambled to their various subjects, reflecting confusion. I was bewildered in a cloud of wonder and horror. The death of William, the execution of Justine, the murder of Clarabelle, and lastly, my wife. Even at that moment, I knew not that my remaining friends were safe from the malignity of the fiend. My father, even now, might be writhing under his grasp, in earnest to be dead at his feet. This idea gave me a shudder and called me to action. I started up in fear, resolved to return to Geneva with all possible speed. There were no horses to be procured, and I must return by the lake. But the wind was unfavorable, and the rain fell in torrents. However, it was hardly morning, and I might reasonably hope to arrive by night. I hired men to row. Why should I dwell upon the incidents that followed this last overwhelming event? Mine has been a tale of horror I arrived in Geneva. My father and Ernest yet lived, but the former son was dead. I see now excellent vegetables. His eyes wandered in vacancy, for they had lost their charm for the life he had lived with. His mortal daughter, whom the children often call that affectionate Janet Fields, who in the decline of life had been too affectionate, clings more earnestly to those that love him. Cursed be the fiend that brought misery to his gray hairs and doomed him to waste existence. He could not live under the horrors that he had accumulated around him. The springs of existence suddenly gave way. He was unable to rise from his bed. Then became of me, I know not. I lost sensation. In chains and darkness were the only objects that pressed upon me. Sometimes in Geneva I drank clay, wandered in the flowery meadows and played bears with the friends of my youth. But I awoke. Found myself in a depression. Melancholy followed, but by degrees I gained a clear conception of the miseries of the situation, and was then released from my prison. For they had called me mad during many months of a restricted solitary cell. Liberty, however, has been a useless gift to me. It is not as I wake in Geneva. At the same time awaken to revenge. As the memory of my past misfortunes pressed upon me, I began to reflect on their cause. The monsters whom I had created, the miserable demon, might have sent abroad into the world for my destruction. I was possessed by a maddening rage when I spoke, and desired and ardently prayed that I might have him within my grasp to reap a great and single revenge on his cursed head. Nor did my hate long confine itself to useless wishes. I began to reflect on the best means of securing him. For this purpose, about a month after my release, I repaired to a criminal judge in the town and told him that I had an accusation to make, that I knew the destroyer of my family, and that I required him to exert his whole authority for the application of his murder. The magistrate listened to me with attention and kindness. "Be assured, sir," he said, "no pains or exertions on my part shall be spared to discover the villain." "Thank you," I replied. "Listen, therefore, to the deposition that I have to make. It is indeed a tale so strange that I should fear you would not credit it, were it not something The story is too connected to be mistaken for a dream, and I have no motive for falsehood. My manner, as I thus addressed him, was impressive but calm. I had formed in my own heart a resolution to pursue my destroyer to death, and this never the magistrate appeared at first perfectly incredulous, but as I continued, he became more attentive and interested. I saw him sometimes shudder with horror, at others when I had concluded my narration, he said, "This is the being whom I accuse, and for procedure and punishment I call upon you to exert your whole power. It is your duty as magistrate, and I believe and hope that your feelings as a man will not revolt from the execution of those functions on this occasion." The address caused a considerable change in the physiognomy. He had heard my story with that kind, half-kind belief that is given to a tale of spirits and supernatural events, but when he was called upon to act officially in consequence, the whole tide of his incredulity turned. He, however, answered mildly, "I would willingly afford you every aid in your pursuit, but the creature of whom you speak appears to have powers which would put all my exertions to defiance. You can follow an animal which can traverse the sea of ice and inhabit caves and dens where no man can venture to intrude. Besides, some months have elapsed since the commission of his crimes, and no one can conjecture to what place he has wandered or what region he may now inhabit. I do not doubt that he hovers near the spot which I inhabit, and if he has indeed taken refuge in the Alps, he may be hunted by the chamois and destroyed by the beast of prey. But I perceive your thoughts. You do not credit my narrative, and do not intend to pursue my enemy with the punishment which he has deserved." As I spoke, rage sparkled in my eyes. The magistrate was intimidated. "You are mistaken," said he. "I will exert myself, and if it is in my power to seize the monster, be assured that he shall suffer punishment proportionate to his crimes. But I fear from what you have yourself described to be his properties, that this will prove impracticable. And thus, while every proper measure is pursued, you should make up your mind to disappoint. my revenge is of no more repute. Yet while I allow it to be advice, I confess that it is that the devouring passion of my soul. My rage is unspeakable. When I reflect that the murderer you refuse my just demand. I have but one resource. I devote myself to giving my life or death to its destruction. I trembled with excess of agitation when I said this. There was a frenzy in my manner, and something I dared call that haughty fierceness. But to a German magistrate whose mind was occupied by far other ideas than devotion and heroism, this elevation of mind was much the appearance of madness. In the endeavor to soothe me as a nurse as a child, I reverted Man, I cried, how ignorant.